Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast where vanilla and chocolate combine for a sweet melt-in-your-mouth goodness. I'm Bennett the Sage, this is Mark the Engineer, so let's get down with the swirl. This is Video Game Reboots, and what makes them suck, and what makes them rock. But before we get to that, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. Mark, how was your 2 weeks?
First off, I want to say that I did not approve that intro at all. It couldn't be any cheesier if it came from fucking McDonald's.
Jeez. What, you don't like my radio announcer voice?
I would say take it into the fucking Super Tool Shed and beat it to death. Right out back, sir. Just make it go away. Jesus. I have no words for that. It's like, hey there, everybody! It's Super Tool Shed 2! Electric Boogaloo! I was like, oh, God. Just make it stop.
That's right. The only reason why I got into podcasting was to be able to do that voice.
You know, you could blow Laszlo in the booth every day for the rest of your life and probably still not sound as good as he was doing this. Just...
Come on, Morning Zoo. It's that's my life dream, baby.
Oh God, yeah. While you, the Patton Oswalt fan, is sitting there going like, "Yeah, let me be the exact type of DJ that Patton Oswalt hates,"
because I'm doing it ironically.
All right. So now that the unpleasantries are out of the way, what did I spend the last 2 weeks doing? Working in a car, fretting over the launch of a particular website. Yeah, just the normal things that make the gears go round, and of course being now it's like, oh yeah, punch up artist and assistant director, that's fantastic. I'm the B team.
You excited for StarCraft 2?
I didn't finish StarCraft 1 yet. Well, I finished StarCraft 1, but I didn't finish Winds of Envy yet. Yes, I'm excited for StarCraft 2, but part of the swarm is like, let me finish Wings of Liberty. I'm lazy. I got other shit to do.
Oh, by the way, I never asked this of you. What are you? More of a Zerg kind of guy? Protoss kind of guy? Human?
I will Zerg rush the shit out of somebody. But I like Terrans because I guess you have to work a little bit harder, but the rewards on the long timeline are always a little bit better than they would be for the Zerg, which is just, you know, make your own cannon fodder, and the Protoss, which is spend extra amounts of time doing every simple little thing. So I'm definitely a Terran guy, just because I think that the risk reward time scale when you're under a time limit works out a whole lot better.
True. As for me, my 2 weeks have been spent doing what I usually do. Writing episodes of Anime Abandoned a month in advance, talking with my girlfriend, and just basically being a general slovenly kind of guy who stays at home.
Get into new media, kids. It's clearly generous.
Look at the body that I've been working on. Man, if Captain America somehow does the slug, I'm the right casting choice for that character.
I have no words. Yes, kids, get into new media so that way you can sit in their basement and not do anything with your days except for write episodes and then sit in a chair and record said episodes, then repeat until you finally tap dance on a shotgun.
Oh, man. You are sugarcoating the shit out of this. You know that?
Well, you know, it's got to be, it all has to be normal. Like, the entire premise of you making me do this, and for the record, audience, he is making me do this. I am entirely held captive.
You love this!
The whole point is that it's supposed to be, well, we talk for so long every day anyway, so why don't we just record an hour of it every couple of weeks, and only every couple of weeks, so that way, you know, the pitcher refills. Like, okay, well, fine, I guess I can do that, and... So I have to give you just as much shit as I do on air as I do off air. That's the deal.
Remind me again why I wasn't better off just writing the show by myself.
Because when you write in a vacuum, you say things like, why, oh, why didn't I take the red pill?
You had to bring up that. You had to bring up that fucking Spectre.
Yeah, let's tell that story. Why not? Since we don't do commentaries and haven't done any commentaries yet. So when Evangelion was going down and we were writing it and buffing out all the dings, there was a stopping point in which because we reviewed the script something like two or three times, and he says, I'm going to force feed you the red pill. And I said, isn't it blue pill? And he goes, no, it's red pill. And Bennett was very, very adamant about the fact that it was the red pill. And it wasn't. It wasn't, and we got called on it so hardcore, and it was at that point that I said, at no point ever are you allowed to write by yourself anymore. It just can't happen. You can't write in a vacuum, because then there's just nobody to call you on your shit. The days of, oh, well, it's Bennett's show, and I'm just going to let him write his show, and then, you know, we'll go over the jokes, and we'll see what flies and what doesn't. Yeah, those days are over. Now it's sit directly next to Lunchbox's shoulder and be like, that's not funny. That's not true. Don't you...
I mean, I don't want to sound unappreciative of what you do for me during the writing process, because for the longest time when I was writing Anime Abandoned, I always felt like, is this just funny to me, or is this funny to somebody outside of my own headspace? And true, we share a similar sense of humor, and we kind of grew up watching Comedy Central Presents as kids, so we have an appreciation for comedy itself, not just things that are funny. So, and when you have two like minds like that, all you're doing is just expanding the vacuum. You're not getting outside of the vacuum. But with that said, I still believe that he performs a very necessary job as far as the writing process is concerned.
Yeah. And still, I only take special thanks because really I didn't want anybody to know. But Kat's kind of out of the bag one episode at a time, because you open the first episode of the shindig. It was like, he does all this. And I'm like, shit, I'm out. Cheese it.
And he doesn't take Mark here does not take I don't know, fame very well. He wants to be behind the shadows kind of guy.
I do, and that's kind of indicative of my personality. That's kind of indicative of my personal preferences, where, you know, like, I never want to be famous. I never really want to be infamous. Most certainly don't want to be infamous. I just, like, I validate myself through the quality of my work. Like, when you guys laugh at, you know, the no need for sword fight joke, that's it, that's all the thanks I need, is you laughing at that joke. When you laugh at the really, you know, dark jokes, like, you just bottomed out the economy on the word love, you know, like that whole joke, when people started posting about that joke and just like, holy crap, like that's all I really need. I mean, I do tons of shit for tons of people and nobody knows, because I pretty much threaten everybody. I think I'm only credited in Dragon Ball Z Abridged because
you did a voice, I think.
Because Kaiser will not let it go. He's just like, no, people have to know. So when I show up in some cameo in Abridged, it's kind of like, well, you know, the whole cast needs to be listed. Everybody needs to get their huzzas and whatever. But for the most part, like, you never know what it is that I'm working on, and because I'm threatening, like, everybody. I threaten Bennett. I threaten Mars Girl. I threaten everybody. I'm just like, do not toot a horn in my name. No banners, no confetti. Just like, yeah, like, at most, just mutter under your breath, and special thanks to the engineer. You know, like, that's it. That's all I want. And I think that's fair.
It's fair to you. You're the one who did the work, and you're the one, so you get to be the one who kind of dictates what kind of reciprocation you want. I mean, if all you want is the special thanks and the knowledge that what you do makes people laugh, then more power to you. If only the Writers Guild would agree with you.
Writers Guild, whatever guild is, hell, is fucking strangleholding the special effects guys. Pretty much it's just that the way that the industry works is that if your union ends in the word guild, don't join it. I could go on a long ass tirade about why that is, but that's another day and another controversy, I'm sure, because it doesn't take SAG very long to piss every single member off. So when that happens, we will talk about it. And poor Bennett will sit pussy back while I'm just sitting there foaming at the mouth, and he's like, yeah, I think that's right, Mark.
You know, it's like, Oh, yeah. Here, let me flick more peanut shells at you, see if I can get you angry.
Yes, describe to these people this experience as to why I'm here, because it's the most beautiful way of describing why I'm on a podcast ever. Because Mike Dodd would put me on a podcast because he's like, well, you talk very well. Or I do a podcast with A-Bear. It's like, well, you talk very well, and you pick up all the dead silence very, very well. But you have your very own special bullshit douchebag, I hate you reason for why it is you want to do this show with me so very badly.
The way I described this podcast to Mark a few weeks ago was that Super Tool Shed, when you get right down to it, is sort of like a tiger who has been taken from the wild and put into a cage that is two sizes too small. All he has is just memories of what it was like to run wild and free in the jungle, pounce on an antelope or two or whatever tigers feed on. And every day, he is constantly looked at by onlookers who don't give a shit about him as a tiger. They just want to see a tiger. And every single day, bullshit kids start flicking peanut shells at him just to see if he can get him angry, just to see if he can get him roar. And of course, the tiger, having nothing else to do but roar in their general direction, will do so and elicit the kind of response that those kids have been looking for. In this metaphor, Mark is the tiger. I am the bullshit little jerk ass kids.
Rawr.
Isn't that just beautiful?
No.
That is beautiful. Sort of like that poem, Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright.
No. People will
Rudyard
judge you crossly.
Kipling, kids, you should do some reading.
Yeah, see, people will judge you crossly for referencing Kipling because you know that that's Kipling and you just reference Kipling on a podcast. When normally it's dick and fart jokes, and I hate Sony and EA sucks!
Sony EA sucks. By the way, here's some Rudyard Kipling references just for you. Now you're learning something.
Yeah, I was. And just to meander from Kipling, just as an aside, I finally watched Downton Abbey and
Oh.
was texting Bennett about it. It was like, the show is amazing. And at one point, one of the characters says, "You're a braver man than I am, Gunga did," and I went, "Oh!" I don't know why. It's like I've heard that a million times. I know that's oh, it is Kipling, awesome. Yeah, so that's all there is to that. And watch Downton Abbey, kids. It's fucking great.
And can I add on top of that I love him loving Downton Abbey. I do. I love him loving that show more than I love the show itself. If only because this is sort of like a counterpoint to people joking about the show being just white people problems or rich white people problems.
What was that joke that Conan O'Brien said that season three of Downton Abbey is going to have its first black character, resulting in Downton Abbey's first black viewer? I mean, yeah, the show is inherently, rich white people problems, but that's the period. It's the class system. But that's kind of what I love about it. Like if you claim any love of like steampunk and period anything really. I mean, you can enjoy any period. It doesn't have to be one specific period. And Downton Abbey is just a beautiful period show. And the ending of the first series was actually it doesn't hit you like a ton of bricks, but it just kind of goes, ah, shit got real. And I can't watch series two because I'd have to pay for it, and I don't want to do that, so I have to wait for Netflix.
You love the show, but you don't love it that much.
Look, I wouldn't increase my cable bill to watch series two of Downton Abbey, but I would totally buy that shit on DVD.
Or wait for it to be available on Netflix.
Yeah, but I don't think I can wait that long. It's that engaging a show, and that's really how you can tell. Because I give every show 3 to 5 episodes to impress me, unless it's one of these short series that's like 7 episodes. Then the scale slides down to about you get 2 episodes to impress me. And I watched all of Downton Abbey the night I started watching Downton Abbey. I did not go to sleep until 8 o'clock in the morning. So
At that
that's the
point,
age.
at that point, Maggie Smith's visage is just tattooed on the inside of your eyelids.
Sometimes it's hard to get over it just because, you know, you hear her say a line and you're just like, Mr. Potter, you know, like it's...
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting she played Professor McGonagall, didn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the same thing with, who is the woman that plays M? God, why, I feel so bad for not remembering her name. Who plays M in James Bond?
Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, like when you see Judi Dench in anything, like you watch the Chronicles of Riddick and you're like, 007. Yeah, like it's just kind of the way that works. Like you can't, like they're so good in one role that you can't take them seriously doing anything else.
That's what we call typecasting, ladies and gentlemen.
Sometimes. Although, got like I know that we're meandering, but I just need to share my very dirty little secret. Last night, I watched finally the fifth Fast and the Furious movie, and the dirty little secret is that I secretly love the Fast and the Furious movie. And before you all laugh or roll your eyes or just go. The reason why it is that I love the Fast and the Furious movies is because I miss driving films for their own sake. Plenty of action movies have car chases, but I love driving movies. Like I used to love like the old Love Bug movies because they were, you know, they were goofy and it's like Herbie and it's a Volkswagen Beetle and all this. But they were still driving movies, especially, you know, like Herbie at the Grand Prix. That shit was amazing. A Volkswagen Beetle versus a Ford GT40 that had no business. Like, a Beetle cannot beat that sort of car, and yet for some reason, they're like, it's like, because he's got a soul.
He's got a soul, and Buddy Hackett is his mechanic.
Seriously. Ah! And if you don't know who the fuck Buddy Hackett is, you haven't lived.
Oh, God. Like, Patton Oswalt, Buddy Hackett, and Louis C.K., top three comedic influences.
I'd go for Don Rickles, too. Just to kind of throw the name in there.
Yeah, I know, but that wouldn't exactly be truthful in my case.
But I miss driving films. Like, you know, people will speak so highly of McQueen films, and McQueen films hold up higher than any driving films in the history of film. But they're, like, Gone in 60 Seconds, I love. Like, it's a hokey-ass movie. It's a hokey-ass remake, but I love it. I love Death Race. Like, I love the original Death Race 2000. I love Death Race. And
what about Death Proof?
Death Proof, I did love, too, because that's another kind of, you know, on the road. It was, you know, on the road thriller movie. But it's still, you know, that kind of on the road driving movie, fucking muscle cars and shit. And for the record, there is no such thing as a European muscle car. I keep hearing this. That is like, oh, fucking Mercedes-Benz like has this SLS, and it's like, and that's a muscle car. No, it sounds kind of like a muscle car, but it can't be a muscle car because it's not American. There are only American muscle cars. Muscle cars go in a straight line. That's why they're called something as stupid as a muscle car, because they're brash and stupid and brute forcey, and they just go in a straight fucking line and have no ability to go around corner. So fuck your European muscle car in air quotes. But...
Oh, Mark, getting all angry about the nomenclature.
I don't know. Something about that, I just hate that. Like, in my brain, there's like, Europeans make sports cars and supercars, but they'll never be able to make a proper muscle car because muscle cars aren't meant to do anything other than drag. That's what they do. You can make a powerful car, but it's just not muscle. But Fast and the Furious as a series, like, and the funny thing is, I've never seen the first two movies. Never. I got on board at Tokyo Drift. It's like me and Resident Evil. I didn't play the first three. I got on board at Code Veronica and didn't stop after that. But I watched Fast Five last night, and I was like, where are my keys? I'm driving. So that's my dirty little secret, but I don't consider it to be that dirty or that really. I guess it's kind of a secret, but
it's a secret. But I'm sure there are plenty filthier, dirtier secrets that you have yet to tell anyone.
Yeah, plenty of bodies in the trunk. Wait, no bodies in my trunk because I drive a sports hatchback.
What, you just kind of drag them by the bumper?
Pretty much. But I miss driving films. So, and most certainly, I love heist films. I really love heist movies a lot. Except for that fucking remake of The Italian Job. Fuck that noise.
Well, you didn't like Mini Coopers going downstairs?
It's not about Mini Coopers going downstairs. It's about a really bad fucking remake of a really good movie.
Oh, Seth Green probably ruined it for you then.
No particular actor ruined it for me. It's just that everybody sort of ruined it in general. And it's just the trailer sucked. The movie sucked. Edward Norton was Edward Norton in it, which is that's all he ever is Edward Norton.
Just that was actually kind of the reason why I could not get into the first Incredible Hulk movie. It's like I couldn't take Edward Norton as Bruce Banner, but I don't think the Hulk in The Incredible Hulk was the best the Hulk has ever been. Fuck the Avengers Hulk. I liked the Hulk in The Incredible Hulk because there was this one moment where like the army is just blasting Hulk with like sound waves, I believe. There were sound waves just trying to, you know, subdue him. And there was that moment where like you feel Hulk's anger. Like you just like you're clutching your fist because you just want him to muscle through. I mean, in no other film I've ever seen, let alone a Hulk film, have I felt a character's anger as more palpably as I did in that one moment. And considering what the Hulk is all about, I mean, a fucking plus on that job.
Yeah, but the problem wasn't the way that they mo-capped the Hulk. The problem was Edward Norton. Like I love Edward Norton. I love him in plenty of movies. And I love the fact that he fought so hard to get his cut to be final cut for Incredible Hulk. But every time I see him, I'm just like, this is just Edward Norton. In the same way that Sam Jackson is just Sam Jackson in movies, Edward Norton is just Edward Norton in movies.
Yeah.
So, but no to The Italian Job, but yes to Fast Five. If you haven't watched, like, if you've been rolling your eyes at The Fast and the Furious forever, but you like heist movies and you like driving movies, watch Fast Five. It's amazing that way.
Before you watch Fast Five or any of the Fast and the Furious movies, if you are into driving films and have not seen Vanishing Point, stop what you're doing right now and watch Vanishing Point.
That's a good point. And but see, you love Vanishing Point, so you can understand like my love of driving movies.
Oh yeah,
and I'm sure especially people can.
Yeah, I mean, especially if the car you're driving in that film is a 1970 Dodge Challenger,
which you want so bad, yet you make fun of my car.
I mean, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, the car in that movie just looked like a car. Your car is trying to look like some kind of bullshit Trans Am with, you know, polished fenders to look like something, you know, look like a prop from a TV show.
Shut up.
You don't think anyone who owns a DeLorean tries to put a Mr. Fusion in the back seat just to like...
Well, they can because there's a sound system that comes with a flux capacitor. And it fluctuates with the beat.
Oh, like, only you would know that.
It's like they used to sell it on ThinkGeek. It was like $300.
$300 for a sound system?
No, it was $300 for the flux capacitor. That's all it was. It was a pass through for your sound system. So every time like power goes from the head unit back to the amp, it would fluctuate. So $300 for that. But tell me, if you had your own DeLorean, that wouldn't seem worth it.
If I had my own DeLorean, I'd probably sell it because it's a piece of crap, but... I mean, outside of it being an awesome movie prop, the DeLorean, the DMC-12, was a piece of shit. You can't deny it.
No, I can't deny it. It was Irish-built and French-powered. I know that. Anyway... All right, we got to get off of car talk, because car talk is going to go on for fucking ever, and we're just going to argue about movie cars all day long.
Because this show is all about reboots. Did I mention this show was about reboots? I think I did about 20 minutes ago. Anyway.
We talked about reboots, sort of. It's just that we were talking about reboots of car movies.
Well, from reboots of car movies to reboots of video games, we've had two so far in the video game landscape this year. One... didn't do all that well. One, doing kind of all right. So, what makes it better or worse? We gotta get to the bottom of this, Mark. We gotta find a way. We gotta crawl through the shit to emerge in the light on the other side.
You know that nobody's gonna like us after this, right?
Oh God. Who ever said that we made this podcast for anyone else but ourselves?
Ourselves. That says that I'm making this podcast for me and you, and I'm not making this podcast for anybody. I'm just stuck here. You're making this podcast for you and to make me suffer. You jerk off.
Anyways.
All right, let's start with the big daddy, the granddaddy. Fucking Devil May Cry, because
this is right now, this is the elephant in the room for both of us. I went on the record as supporting that game with my review because I really, really liked the game. I can't help but like the game. I liked what it did with the platforming. I liked what it did with combat. And I liked, well, I wouldn't say I liked what they did with the character, but I liked the fact that they actually gave him an arc versus, you know, Dante just starting Dante and wound up being Dante throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, here's what I did. I watched your review. I watched a bunch of reviews, including Sessler's review. And generally speaking, the reviewing audience didn't have a problem with Devil May Cry at all, other than the narrative being somewhat predictable, Dante being juvenile, the jokes being juvenile, because we'll all lean back and go, "Fuck you!" Which I think is the low point in the game, in terms of humor.
It's just like, fuck you! No, fuck you! No, fuck you! No, fuck you! Yeah, that was definitely an eye-rolling moment for me.
That is Bob Saget walked in and did a guest spot on the script. But my general opinion towards everybody who's the general playing audience who either did or didn't play it and still had a problem with it. Fuck you. That's it. That just two simple words. Fuck you. Because I have played all the Devil May Cry's and I do like them. And obviously Devil May Cry 2 wasn't the best moment in the series, but we've all just kind of gotten over that at this point. And everybody can make the joke like, I wanted to be the one to fill our dark soul with light. But that's years away, and we got away from that too. The fact is that the game has always played solid, and it only got better with age. And to have Ninja Theory on it was the best course of action, I think, that there possibly could have been. And the fact that people are denying Ninja Theory pretty much all the applause in the fucking world because Dante's hair changed. They watered down the combat. Meh. You know what? You can just go suck a bag of bleeding dicks. Because I can't stand the idea that people are so completely resistant to change that they would just absolutely roll their eyes at Devil May Cry. I mean, yeah, like the aesthetic was very good. The way that the story was told was B plus, like a solid B plus, maybe an A minus.
B.
But at the end of the day, you felt good playing it. You know, if you were ridiculously good at Devil May Cry games, good. Then blast through the game and unlock the hard mode. Knock yourself the fuck out. You're so great at it, it's not going to take you that long then, is it? And I just could not wrap my brain around why it is that people would sink a whole franchise because one thing changed. Like, why would you go so far as to say, you know, like, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, Devil May Cry changed and you shouldn't buy it. That's not what you should do. Not completely out of hand. Like, yesterday I was watching on Twitter that people weren't too happy about the new Deadpool trailer. Because they're like, that's not Nolan North. And I'm like, then you don't know the sound of Nolan North, because that's Nolan North, kids. And his voice changes a little bit every time he does the role, but that's more so down to the director than it is to Nolan himself.
I mean, Nolan North doesn't always have to sound like fucking Nathan Drake all the time. You do realize that, right, guys?
And no matter what, he always sounds like Nathan Drake when he's screaming, so everybody should be fucking happy. But everybody just kind of gets... It's like someone is just running around with a handful of spicy mustard, smearing it into the assholes of fans, and just riling them up for no good reason. And I just don't think that that's quite fair, because Devil May Cry was a good game. I mean, if you had to put it on a, you know, on a 10-point scale, it's a solid 8. There were things missing, but there were new features that were actually pretty fucking good. And at the end of the day, I had a fun time playing Devil May Cry. So, really, the point of conversation is, what the hell was wrong with just shutting up and giving it a chance?
I've always been under the impression that fans, as a collective unit, don't really know what they want. They think they know what they want, but they don't really know what it takes to get what they want. And when they have it, they don't know why they wanted it in the first place. Like, because everyone after DMC4 was like, oh god, the series is getting stale. It's just... And the Nero bullshit, you know, of course, the Nero bullshit. So, okay, what did we learn from DMC4? One, keep the character Dante. Okay. Two, the direction that it's going in is not working. Okay. So what did they do for the reboot? They kept the character Dante. Yeah, he didn't act like the same Dante as before, but it was Dante. At the end of the day, that was Dante. A younger Dante, sure, but that was Dante. What did they do? Two, they introduced new mechanics. That grappling feature, I really honestly loved. I mean, there was a learning curve to it, but once you got past it, it was like, yeah, I could see how this worked. And by the way, guys, if you think that the platforming bits in DMC was awful, try putting in DMC 1 again and see how awful the platforming bits were in that fucking game. At least you had control of the camera in DMC. DMC 1 had this fixed perspective where you couldn't even tell the height of your jump and how long you were going to jump. Guess how many times you died trying to figure out that flame gauntlet puzzle, huh? You remember that?
True, and the fucking specters that would come through the walls and shit.
Ugh.
Which I really hated. But
so, you have, like, okay, I think the audience, every gaming audience, needs perspective. They just need perspective. They have to remember what DMC was, what it is now, and why this is not the instance to call betrayal.
Well, the thing is that perspective comes at the expense of actually listening to someone outside of yourself. Like, when you're the one that's butthurt, and, like, it's so easy to just say, like, it affects me directly! Yeah, internet! And the thing is that, like, you don't understand shit. And I didn't want to put this on Twitter because I wanted to save it for this podcast. Here's some really simple math. 50% of fans don't know what they're talking about. 100% of fans don't give a shit on fact-checking. And absolutely, that is a number that is spread across multiple fandoms. Like, seriously, it is, like, and if you're wondering if you're a part of that and you've never sat down before you complained about something and thought what might have made it happen, then guess what? You're part of the problem. I had a long conversation with one of our friends the other day about the whole SimCity problem right now with Origin, and his opinion was, as most people's opinions are, is that I think that online DLC is bullshit. Online DLC through Origin is, like, DRM. Like, yeah. Online DRM is bullshit through Origin servers. And I went, yeah, but that's the way that the entire industry needs to go. And on his high horse, he was just like, why? And I went, because there's no other way to stop piracy. If a game has to connect to an authentication server to authenticate your license, then that means that you can't steal your license. Your license can't possibly be stolen because they know every single license that's supposed to be registered. And if two of those licenses pop up at the exact same time, guess what happens? They get booted. It's the perfect solution. And his counterpoint was, then why is Valve not doing it? Because Valve doesn't have EA money. EA can look as bad as they want right now. They've got deep pockets. They just managed to make sure that piracy is one of the least things on their fucking minds, and instead trying to rebuff the fucking Origin servers. That's their concern. They don't care about what anybody thinks because they just guarantee that every single person that has SimCity and is playing SimCity bought SimCity.
That's all their minds are thinking right now. And can I go on a little tangent here? I've always hated when fans got up, you know, game developer publishers' asses for you know, trying to protect their intellectual property. And this was what we were talking about with, like you said, like SimCity. It's just sort of like this knee-jerk reaction to think that they're just doing this to be jerks. You know, it's just like, they don't trust me to not pirate, you know, their games. So, you know, it's like getting angry at department stores for putting in anti-theft devices on the clothing that they're trying to sell.
Yeah. And the thing is that everybody that's been complaining about Origin, the mistake that EA made was that they didn't really forecast their launch very well, which is fine. It happens. It makes them look bad. What makes them look worse is the whole online DRM authentication thing. But you want to know what? It protects their intellectual property and makes sure that they're making money where they need to make money. And this is me saying this while knowing full well that EA is a bunch of assholes. That for all the good that they've ever done in terms of pumping money into, you know, failing franchises and pumping money into studios that are going to close and buying licenses that elsewise would go away. I know that EA is a bunch of assholes. When they bought the fucking NFL license to make sure that nobody else could make a fucking NFL game. Yeah, that was a massive asshole move. And they do a lot of bad for the industry, but they also do a lot of good for the industry. And sometimes to do the thing that protects the thing that you love the most, you gotta fucking look bad.
Didn't you watch that Abraham Lincoln movie? He was trying to heal a nation, and that's why he suspended habeas corpus.
Look at it like that. You could even, I mean, if you need a more relative corollary, you can look at fucking Dark Knight. I mean, look at Dark Knight. It's like, yeah, let's just make Batman look bad, because elsewise, you know, the city gets crushed under the fact that Harvey Dent became this horrible vigilante. For like 2 seconds.
That's a separate episode of Super Tool Shed.
But yeah, I mean, it's, EA is a necessary evil because they're doing the things that prop up the industry and keep it going during times when, quite honestly, every industry, like every fan-based kitsch industry, is in some way hemorrhaging money. And you can see it in the landscape. Star Wars belongs to Disney. Treyarch does this. EA does that. Bungie has to make a new franchise. Microsoft has to prop up 343 Industries for the new Halo trilogy. Like, the entire landscape is that everybody has to do a little bit of something that everybody doesn't like in order to make sure that next year that game you really want makes it to a goddamn shelf.
It's just like, you don't think that anyone's going to be like all angry at EA for doing what they did with SimCity if they knew that if they hadn't done what they did with SimCity, they probably wouldn't have another Battlefield game coming out.
Yeah. And on the whole Valve thing, it's like, okay, you can argue that Valve kind of prints money, but Valve prints money because the fans give them the ink. And that's really what's important here, is that Valve is entirely made up of the goodwill of the fans and the intelligence of Gabe Newell. So if Valve just took this left turn and said that every single game on Steam needs to authenticate against Steam 100% of the time, nobody would be happy. Everybody will be looking for alternatives, and Steam all of a sudden becomes the bad guy. Valve becomes the bad guy. Gabe becomes the bad guy, and then they get lumped in with EA. So no, Gabe makes the smart decision, and the people with him make the smart decision. Like, no, we'll just have one-time authentication and stay pussy back while EA takes the full brunt of this whole 100% of the time authentication of a license right up until the point where nobody cares anymore. And that's what it is. It's Valve sitting back, waiting for the fires to go down, because I'll guarantee you, 5 years' time, Steam has 100% authentication. Because they have to protect the licenses, not only their own, but third parties that decide to go with Steam as a launching platform. Not only, you know, the big AAA titles and the big AAA studios, but the indies as well. The indies are pass-fail on whether or not they're making money through Valve. So it's gotta happen, and it's gonna happen, and the only thing that is happening is that Valve gets to remain the good guy, and they get to be good cop, and they're going like, oh, we're not gonna do that right now, maybe never, while EA plays bad cop, and it's like, no, because we have to protect the goddamn license. That's the way that it rolls. And fan, like, and it's fan entitlement. It's audience entitlement that makes these, you know, that really fans these flames. And it's fan entitlement that really, you know, like, this series belongs to me, that really hurt Devil May Cry a lot. Like, Dante belongs to me. He wasn't really aging all that well, but he belongs to me. How dare you fucking change him? And, like, don't you people realize that you're just hurting everybody? Not only the studio, not only the people who, you know, have to work on the next project and are just really hoping that the game does so well that they can get a sequel so that they can build on the engine that already exists so that they don't have to build another one from scratch. But you're hurting the people around you who also want to play good games. You're telling people unjustly that, like, Devil May Cry sucks. Why? I don't like Dante's hair. Someone actually told me that they don't want to play Devil May Cry because they don't like Dante's hair.
So apparently graphics are important to a game, just so long as the hair matches what you think it should match.
Which is just straight crap. And you can say, like, oh, well, that's one person. Do you have any idea how many times I've heard this argument? I don't like Dante's hair. I don't like his coat. I don't like the way he looks. I don't like the way he moves. I don't like the way he talks. And then when you get out of the bullshit arguments, then it's they watered down the control system. They did this. They did that. It's like, you know what? You may have hated Marvel vs. Capcom 3 when it first came out, because I sure as fuck did, but you got used to it, and eventually you accepted it for what it was. It was a nice big-ass gesture from Capcom to their fans, and a brand new throughway for new gamers to come in and not get completely wrecked by the people who already know what they're doing. And that's you look at that, you translate that to Devil May Cry. Sure, they could have made the ridiculous, eye-bleedy, balls-hard Dante fucking Devil May Cry game that you always wanted, with bullshit long-haired Dante and his crap coat and his bathrooms in the back bullshit. But all that guaranteed was that people who play Devil May Cry will continue to play Devil May Cry. It doesn't increase the baseline of growing the audience. And that's what we need. We need the audience to grow. We need for the numbers of the audience to be so ridiculously massive that it cannot be denied anymore that gaming is art, that game development is art, that art goes into it. I mean, even if you argue that art is supposed to be something that's for no other sake than itself, so it can't technically be art because of the fact that it's specifically meant to be entertainment, and art isn't supposed to be meant as entertainment. Even if you try and seesaw those arguments, the audience needs to grow. And sometimes that means that you don't get it exactly the way that you want it. But that's okay, because at the end of the day, you still got what you wanted. Or at least you would have known that you got what you wanted had you just played the fucking game.
It's this prejudice, this gaming prejudice that I really, really sincerely object to. That's sort of why I go into every game whenever I'm reviewing something completely blind about, like, trailers and, like, level concepts that developers leak online. So that way I could just enter the game without any kind of preconceptions. I could just judge the game for what it does or what it's trying to do.
All right. And now that I have thoroughly, and you have too, wrapped the fucking audience on the head, let's talk about tits.
Yes. We had a new reboot on the block, and it goes by the name of Tomb Raider. You may have heard of it. You know, it's a Lara Croft changed gaming landscape forever some 15 years ago.
There's a statue of her.
Mm. There is a statue of what certainly became gaming's leading lady, at least in the seventh generation of consoles. You know, like, she kind of usurped that title from Samus some years back, and she lost that crown. I don't know, like, who would you consider gaming's leading lady today? Certainly not Samus today, not after Metroid Other M.
No, because they did well and then they just did badly. I don't think there is one, honestly.
And we gotta fix that.
Heavenly Sword only had one game and it was fantastic. Tomb Raider is only just rebooting, and pretty much they had to dodge the bullet of the fact that the landscape was in no uncertain terms raping her. So I really don't think that there is one singular, you know, just consistently look to this person, you know, leading lady in gaming right now. I think that there is no strong female model in gaming, and that's actually really sad.
Yeah, I did. So I'm looking at my copy of Tomb Raider right now, and I think it's benefiting from the lower expectations because I'm playing the game and I don't want to smash the disc. I don't want to throw my controller against the wall in pure disgust. So that's a plus. I mean, it doesn't really say much about the game, but considering where the baseline is, it has nowhere else to go but up. And I think at the root, that's the difference between the reboot of DMC versus the reboot of Tomb Raider. At the end of the day, nobody looked at DMC 4 and thought, you know, like, oh, it was bad, but it wasn't like Angel of Darkness bad. It wasn't, what was it, Last Revelations? Wasn't that the last game? Or
something like that. Or
like the game released in 2008. Tomb Raider, it wasn't
Legend or something.
Yeah, Legends or whatever. No one thought it was that bad. So I guess Tomb Raider is actually, yeah, I'll go out and say it. Tomb Raider is benefiting from lower expectations. And I will say this from the game. I don't want to spend too much time on the game because of my upcoming review of it. But I will say that as a game, it works all right because it's kind of aping from the game that stole from it in the first place, Uncharted.
Yeah, and honestly, Uncharted came from a vacuum of a good Tomb Raider game in the first place. So, and everybody loves Uncharted, and Uncharted, you know, deserves all the credit that it gets. And I personally can't get behind the idea of, you know, this more frail Lara. And you can't really call it hypocrisy because this isn't about, you know, not giving the game a chance because I don't like the look of her or, you know, the mechanics or don't look the way that I'm particularly used to. It's that if, like, I just don't, like, I'm going to play the game and they're going to get my money. Because I am going to give it a chance. I'm going to give it a fair shake. But me personally, I don't like it when strong female characters are just sandbagged. And let's show their frail and beating heart because they are not made of the same stuff we're made of. You know, Duke Nukem was always a badass. You know, the Master Chief was, like, from the time he was 12, was snapping necks. It's, like, it's not what I want. You know, it's not what I want.
I think Tomb Raider is kind of going the same route that Far Cry 3 did, where you start off as a character who really doesn't know what they're doing, and through their experience of going through the game, they became, like, warrior! You know, that's, you kind of become, it's Lara becoming the badass we think she is.
And if that's the arc of the game when I play it, fine. Then I'm happy. But I don't really like that backpedaling. I don't like that backpedaling of the idea that, you know, that a frail girl is hardened by the world. Because that's what made Other M suck so fucking bad. Baddest bounty hunter in the fucking galaxy. And she's like, is it okay if I use my missiles at him?
Yeah, like, well, it's a different situation from Other M. You know, Samus was still, you know, like, she was trained to be a soldier, but still acted like, can I use my missiles? You know, versus Lara in this game, where she's just a college student trying to find a lost civilization. She had no use for ever using a gun or anything like that. But now she's in a situation where she has to, you know, hunt deer, and she has to, by the way, I don't get the point of killing animals in the game. Like, at the beginning you do that, but like I'm towards the middle of the game right now, and I can't even remember the last time I had to kill an animal.
Went straight fucking Metal Gear Solid 3 with that. Fantastic.
Well, you know, tangent for another day. It's a different situation like that. Lara was never trained as a soldier like Samus was.
Or please tell me that she's at least rich. Tell me she's rich.
Yeah, she's rich.
Okay.
Like, she, you know, her family is, you know, paid for this expedition. I believe that's the plot. Yeah, Croft. Yeah, she's on this expedition being helped funded by her family.
Okay. That's all right. Yeah. I really can't. I have a very difficult time getting wrapped around my brain that, you know, the badass is, you know, wasn't always kind of just rough and tumble and hardcore like that. Like, I had a problem with Perfect Dark Zero for the same kind of reason, where they didn't completely nerf Joanna Dark, but she was definitely different. You know, like, she was more girly, and I just don't, like, you know, just a message to developers, anybody really to anybody developing a story for any reason, I'm not saying that your female lead needs to fucking have a buzz cut and wear flannel, but I am saying that they can take a punch in the face and not cry. That's what I'm saying. You know, just, they can be feminine, but just make it so that they can take a punch in the face and not cry. Do you think that if Superman punches Big Barda in the face that she just sits there and goes, it doesn't happen?
Well, that's judging by the fact that all female characters should react the same way, and that, you know, as a character, they should have a broad range of reactions, not just one.
Yeah, but the trope is always the fucking same. The road always narrows to this bit where it's, you know, they became hard, but they used to be super girly, or they, you know, they are hard, but they still are super girly, or they're tough and they maintain their femininity, lollipop chainsaw. And, you know, just, there can be a more subtle balance other than this woman had her entire fucking world wrecked, so she has to be hard, even though she likes ponies.
Well, to be fair, she's not like that in the game. She just seems more business oriented. It's like, I really want to find this lost civilization off the coast of Japan. I really want to find this place. It's like, and I know it's there. Like, I had this hunch, and I want to go there. Fuck you, the guy with glasses who thinks that it's not there. It is here. Now I'm going into I wouldn't call it spoiler territory for the game, because you know, it happens in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, so that's not really spoilers. That's just, anybody could watch a first 15 video and get that much out of it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that, like, that's my position. Like, I love strong female leads. Like, that's why I love The Legend of Korra. You can have emotional moments while still having your chick be tough. And that's why I didn't like Other M. That's why it is I didn't really like Perfect Dark Zero. It's like, but that's the road that it always goes right the fuck down. And it drives me insane. You know, like, my mom, just to explain this, just to get really Freud about it, my mom is not the person that was like, I'm super girly, and then life made me tough. You know, it's like, she didn't grow up tough. Like she grew up like a little poor, but she grew up with values, and those values didn't make her tough. They just made her tactical. And maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Not so much tough, but tactical. Like, a woman can still be ridiculously tactical without, you know, again, without having the buzz cut and the fucking flannel, or without being like chicken lollipop chainsaw. Like, you can find that difference. Doesn't have to be femme fatale, doesn't have to be huge tits, doesn't have to be these things that we see in all games. Like, it can be this perfect merger of a life interestingly lived, or a life particularly lived. But it just seems to be that anybody who's writing female leads, or writing female characters in general, just, it seems to be that they all grow up in the same house, in the same neighborhood, and have the same things happen to them.
The human imagination is sadly limited in that way.
Screw it. Let's just make a game based on, like, some of the people we know. Let's just write that game.
That'd be the most boring game ever. Yeah, I know this chick. She's trying to go to college. You know, it's tough because she doesn't want to know what she wants to do with her life. So she has to struggle with that, finding herself, finding what her future is going to be. And why don't we make a game about that?
But then demons come out. You know, like, that's it. Just have that lead up, and then, like, demons erupt from the college. You know, and she's got to figure out how to take care of all the demons, and she has to use makeshift weapons and shit. That's
stabbing a demon with a sharpened ruler.
Yeah, that's how you fucking do that shit. No chainsaws, no shotguns, just cricket bats and fucking chairs. Just,
so what, like, we're gonna Dead Rising this shit?
Yes, that's kind of why it is that I think that Dead Rising works so well. It's because it wasn't the standard, you know, like, groovy, you know, like, it's not that. It's just, use your fucking wits. Because all zombie games suffer from this, really, is that, like, they give you an arsenal and a bunch of squishy targets, and it's a shooting gallery. Like, oh, sometimes a zombie pops out of the side. Like, that's, but it's, it, I think that's why it is that I like Dead Space 3 so much, too, is because it was more so about using your wits and conserving ammo and being really smart about, you know, making sure that you were getting the collector bot to do shit. But normally, fucking zombie games are just an arsenal versus squishy targets, and sometimes there's a really big, thick, squishy target. But that's really what it boils down to. So instead, let's just have this game about this girl that just has to use her fucking wits to survive. And no, she wasn't ROTC when she was growing up, but she didn't grow up a military brat. She's just perfectly normal, but raised by a generation of horror films or action movies or something, where she just has common sense to see zombies or demons and just throw a fucking chair and run.
Sort of like she watched Die Hard 1 too many times.
Yeah. You know, like, that's what makes No More Heroes so good, is the fact that Travis Touchdown isn't a traditional swordsman. He's just a fucking otaku kid that wants to get fucked. And you're behind him because you're like, I'm an otaku kid that wants to get fucked. Fuck yeah! And you're running around with a lightsaber. Like, that shit's amazing.
I've never seen someone so deconstruct a game so thoroughly with so few words.
What else would you call it? I mean, really.
I mean, like, I probably would have spent way too many words trying to describe the appeal of No More Heroes, but you did it as succinctly and as brashly as possible. Way to go.
Dude, that's why I love No More Heroes, because the premise is so simple, and as a man, you can get behind that. Like, it is, it's not an extremely manly game, I wouldn't feel, but it's...
Outside of the name, come on, Travis Touchdown.
Yeah, but that's just Suda51 being fucking Suda51. It's like, come on, Mondo Zappa and Killer is Dead? Yeah, that's just Goichi being Goichi. But still, you know, you can get behind that kind of idea that this dude doesn't want to be the hero, he doesn't want to save the town, he doesn't even want to take down all the other assassins because they're bad people. Dude just wants to get laid.
And being a hero gets all the mad bitches.
Yeah, seriously, like, being the guy who fucking takes down every assassin in the city, like, you get the fucking French chick. Awesome! You know? Like, that's what you want. Like you want, like, No More Heroes works, and No More Heroes is popular because it stars a nerdy guy who gets offered sex in exchange for killing every bad man in town. And you cannot say with a straight face that you wouldn't accept that offer. That you would not risk life and limb to kill every single bad man in town, where the fucking trophy is that you get to go to bed with a French chick named Sylvia.
You know, if I was living inside the Travis Touchdown world of No More Heroes, and, you know, and killing those assassins is the only way. Like the cops are freaking useless, and you're not gonna get busted for killing them. It's like, you don't understand, they're bad people. It's like, you just murdered them in cold blood. But they're evil!
But they're evil! That dude is dressed up like an evil samurai.
Come on! Dude! This guy was about to beat me up with a baseball bat and baseballs! Come on! Self-defense, man!
Like, you see the strawberry shortcake chick? She's murdered like 50 people this week. It's like, yeah, no, gotta run you in, sorry. But if you were in that scenario, if you were in that world, you cannot tell me with a straight face that you wouldn't do it.
Nah, probably not.
See, you just can't claim the high ground on that. It can't be done. And that's why that works. And that's why it is that I'm imploring someone, normal girl, just normal. And I'm not talking about, like, oh my god, normal, or fucking someone who wears pink all the time. No, fuck them. Because those are the people who haven't had any experience in life whatsoever. Just someone, like, someone normal, nerdy, almost Daria-esque, and just demons come out. And she has to survive and make all the demons go away. There, go. I've given you your idea. You know, like, that's the kind of thing that I want to see. Like, a well-rounded female lead that's not too girly, not too butch, that just survives on wits and just, you know, just gets really MacGyver about shit.
Now I'm just thinking of a like Army of Darkness, except instead of Ash, it's Dario. Groovy.
That just wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. And no, even as a fan of things, that just doesn't.
Even as a fan of things.
Even as a fan of both things, I that just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't.
It doesn't, because you can't have a character like Daria in a game like the Army of Darkness games, or like the Evil Dead games, rather. It just doesn't work.
No, because she's not smarmy. She's just...
She is smarmy. She's sarcastic enough. But she just doesn't have that bravado that setting really needs.
Yeah, because she can't strike that pose on top of the car with the chick hanging off her leg. Like, Jane Lane is hanging off of her leg. And the poster says trapped in time, surrounded by evil, doesn't give a shit. It just doesn't work.
I think we've exhausted the topic for today, this week. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on Super Tools Shit. You got any last remarks before we head out?
Go do that thing I said.
Some indie developer who might be hearing this, go and make the Normal Girl Defeats Demons game. Come on, we can make it about we can make it metaphorical and shit. We'll brave this shit up.
Seriously, I'm all for it. I'll kickstart that game.
I'll kickstart that fucking game. All right, see you guys later.